I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class podcast. I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And I'm Laura Checkley.
And we are, of course, here to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't...
Everyone else, say it! Who bloody will? See, no one joins in. Michelle, come in and say... Michelle's our producer, by the way. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. And on that note, who are we celebrating this week, Han?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't know who is more excited about this episode's guest, me or Laura. Anyway, this week's guest has been in show business for over 45 years and she began her career performing as a singer in working men's clubs before getting a break on Opportunity Knocks in 1974.
Where, if the internet is to be believed, she came second to a singing Jack Russell.
She's had an extensive career as a stage actress, often appearing in the West End as well as touring nationally and internationally in musicals and plays, including Me and My Girl, Godspell, Shout, Annie, Grease, Don't Dress for Dinner, Habeas Corpus, Romeo and Juliet, Sweet Charity and Little Shop of Horrors, to name just a few.
Alongside all of that, she has been gracing our TV screens for decades as a guest and presenter on virtually every talk show and variety show ever made, but more notably appearing in TV classics such as Two Up, Two Down and You Rang, My Lord. However, she is, of course, best known for playing one of TV's favourite ever characters, the lovable chalet maid Peggy, in the legendary TV hit Hidey Hi.
Famed for her signature dress sense, and I can tell you right now, she's not letting us down today. I can tell you from personal experience, she is as an exceptional a straight actress as she is a comedian, a national treasure and one of life's genuinely loveliest people. Listeners, give it up for the one-time winner of Rear of the Year, the one, the only, Sue Pollard!
Oh, girls, I'm absolutely delighted. I want to cry. I couldn't have written a better bio myself. I mean, it just, you've done your research so well, because a lot of people, sadly, they don't. I'll tell you why. A great example of that was I was on a radio show and then he said, tell me, what's it like to be Gladys Pugh? I said, well, I think you're better as Ruth Madden. I mean, obviously, poor sod, that straight away you'd got a bit of a hurdle to climb.
Oh, no.
Oh, bless him, I said, never mind. But that was lovely, actually.
But as we were doing that list, though, I could see you're a bit itchy in your chair, like you felt a bit uncomfortable with
it. I can't stand it.
Why?
If anybody ever says to me, oh, no. I get the beam because I'm thinking, oh, you forget that you've been fortunate enough to do all that work. Mm. But actually... I'd far rather talk about somebody's, and what are you up to now, Don? And I said, well, I'm doing this. Anyway, let's hear about you. I don't like it. Never liked it.
So, Sue, we start each week asking our guests to take us back to a place and time that has some meaning to them, somewhere that has a connection to their working class roots. So, if you were able to today, if you could take us back, where would you take us?
Yes, I would take you back to the Beeston Miners' Welfare, right, because I think you mentioned earlier in the introduction. And this guy that used to play the piano, he was an MD, at the Cooperative Arts Theatre. In those days, the actual co-op spent money, not just on groceries, but money on a big amateur theatre.
Oh.
Oh, it was tremendous. We did about 10 shows a year. They had all the proper stuff. They had a musical theatre company, and then they had a drama company. You could audition for all of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, this particular chap, Jack, he said, I reckon I could get you a few gigs at the Working Men's Club. You know, what do you fancy? I said, well, do you know what? I'd like to give that a go. He said, because look, he said, all we need to do is spend 2 or 3 hours. He said, we'll just do a set. We'll do some song choices. He said, you'll be able to get really good experience. And I said, oh, do you know, I'm going to do it then. So I just did a few gags, you know, just silly, silly little things like, what's the fastest cake in the world? Scone.
It's a good one.
Real sophisticated enjoyment, you know. And then, so I did a few of those. Then I did a few songs that Jack had he'd arranged for them. You know, one segued into another, which
yeah,
I thought
so like
was
variety.
Really...
It was like 25 minutes of sort of variety. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it was really nice, actually, because one segued into the other and everything and things like that. So I really learned a lot from that.
Yeah. So that's obviously like where you started performing. But tell us a bit about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What was it like? Where you lived? And
grew up in Nottingham. And I knew that I was never going to really fit in there.
As Why?
Because when I was 6 years old, I asked for a polka dot dress. I got the polka dot dress, and then I said, I'd actually like, almost like a court jester's outfit, if you like, I want one yellow tight and one blue one.
Nice.
Which I thought, well, it was never heard of then. You just didn't get them in those colours for a start.
No, yeah, of course
and
not.
And older,
no.
My mother went, oh, no, oh, dear. Then she'd say to me, Dad, I think our Sue's going to be a bit of a handful because she don't like anything that I've offered her at CNA. No, she took me to CNA. I said, I don't like any of this. Oh, go on, just give it a go. Anyway, that is when you realise if anybody, whatever sex they are, if they have, shall we say, an inclination to go towards something that is not the norm,
yeah,
then because people don't understand, it's never been in their life remit, you know, they've never met anybody in their family, they just can't seem to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of saying, oh, that's an interesting look or something, you know, they'll go, oh, correct. And then as an example, I can tell you that, you know, you have to be quite resilient, whatever, if you want to be yourself in anything. You've got to have belief that, you know, you're not just doing it, you're doing it because this is what you want to be. And years ago, people who didn't know what you're doing sort of there, and they used to say, what have you come as? Because they thought you were in fancy dress.
Mm.
Yeah. And then, you know, whatever. So you'd have to go, oh, I said, you know, I didn't know what to put on, so I just put everything I could think of on. You know, and they don't know what to say. And then this other person said, it was really funny, I got off a train to do Godspell in Liverpool. I was off the train and two guys, I had a feather boa around my neck, and one of them got one side and the other one got the other side and pulled it. So, oh, there's Shango. Welcome to Liverpool.
And anyway, I don't want to laugh.
So you grew up in Nottingham.
Yeah.
And when did the idea first form that you go, I want to be an actress, I want to sing,
when
I
was
dance.
About six, there I was. I stood on a box, and it was made and put together by the teacher. And it was just an ordinary cardboard box, absolutely gaffer taped to death. There we were on the box. And I say, fear not, Mary, the angel Gabriel will send a messenger because you are with child. And then sadly, I think I was a bit overzealous and fell through the box, the lid. Well, it won't be able to, the bloody tape was obviously too, you know.
Did you get a big laugh?
Well, enormous.
There you go. And that's when it was, that's how it all began.
I think so. And then my headmistress, Miss Lee, LEE, and she said to me one day, why are you wearing your school gabardine like an opera cloak? Because my arms weren't in it. You know, I just did it round my neck, you know, that bow at the front. And I said, well, I just like it, Miss. She says, not in my school, you don't. Anyway, so she said, come to my room afterwards. She's very nice, actually, to be fair, Miss Lee. And she said, I think you quite possibly have theatrical leanings.
Really?
No. No. So she said, I think there's an outlet for you. I said, oh, how lovely, miss. What do you think I should do? She said, I have a gentleman friend called Mr. White who runs the Co-op Arts Theatre. She said, I think you should join. And it was £2.60 a year. That was what you had to pay.
Right, right.
And Mr. White was absolutely marvellous. He said, yes, I think you could be all right. He said, you could probably learn, you know, a decent craft here, because we used to have visitors and we used to have people that used to come along that were appearing at the Playhouse or something.
All right.
And they used to come round and talk to us about, you know, this is what. So I knew then, though, I thought, and I took it very seriously. And I didn't miss a rehearsal.
And what did your parents feel about you wanting to, you know, go along to this theatre group?
Oh, they loved it. They said, well, yeah, they used to come, everything you saw. You see,
did they? Amazing.
Yeah. I was terribly lucky, darling. I had so much support from them. It was absolutely bloody marvellous. They never once poo-pooed anything. The only thing that I didn't get at one point was when I wanted to go into showbiz properly and earn some money. And they said, you can do it on one condition, that you do a shorthand typing course.
Mm-hmm. What did your dad do as a job? What was his?
My dad, first of all, he worked in Players Woodyard factory, making cigarette boxes, big packing boxes for sending the fags abroad.
Right, right. Okay.
And also just, you know, in Britain. But you know what I always used to say, Dad. Well, I didn't say it to him because he was, you know, quite a proud bloke, and he would have been offended if I'd said, I think you should go and do something better. You're clever. Anyway, he did get employed as a data processing officer.
Wow.
For the same company, which meant he was in charge of all the wages and he had to make sure that all the computers, well, the IT as was then.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And he was marvellous. And then Hilda was the housewife. And then when...
Hilda's your mum?
Yeah, Hilda's mum. I've never called her mum because I was until I was 15, I was a hippie. And then I said, I can't call you mum because you've got your own name, Hilda. No, I said, I think I should call you Hilda.
Did she mind?
No.
No, oh,
she was
cool.
Smiling, and I think she was secretly quite pleased, but my dad went, you're not calling me Don. I can't have that.
So you've done your typing, so your mum's told you you're all right, you can carry on doing what you want to do, and you've been doing the Working Men's Club. What happens after that? So how do you get your break, and what happens, like?
Well, you know, years ago, the Stage newspaper, which I still believe we have, but it's more or less online now.
Mostly online, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So there was an advert in the Stage newspaper and it said, people required. Now, they used to call it chorus then. There's nothing wrong with chorus because the opera still say, I'm in the opera chorus.
Yeah, of course.
But, of course, sadly, musical theatre decided to change it to ensemble. Talk about pretentious. Anyway, so there they are. And I said, I'd love to give this a go. I said to my dad, I want to be a pro now. I think I'm old enough. I want to leave my job, so I'm going. And they said, all right then, you know, good luck. So I went.
And what was this for? What show was it?
This was for the Desert Song.
Oh.
With, you know, my desert is waiting. Do you remember?
No, go on, sing it.
I'll sing it.
It's fantastic. Anybody that might be listening to this and might even remember it themselves or get their grandmother or whatever to say, it was of its day, darling, it was your Andrew Lloyd Webber's.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was Sigmund Romberg.
Right.
Oh, I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, I know, it's fantastic. With the fabulous John Hanson. He was, that time, he was what you might call one of the lovely crooners of the West End in films and all that. And it was marvellous. And I went, oh, this will be fabulous. I can't wait. Anyway, I got there and he said, can you come back at 5 o'clock? They did the audition. You had to sing and that, you know. And I'd just been in the amateur production of The Desert Song.
Oh, brilliant.
So I was lucky because I'd got my music and everything. Anyway, he said, come back and you'll have a dancing rehearsal. So I got back, you know, and I went, oh, no, please, dancing, the four words in the English language. 5, 6, 7, 8, what am I going to do? But all we have to do is like waltz. I mean, I know we can waltz. It's a bit 1, 2, 2, 1, 2, 2. So that's easy. So I got the part in the ensemble and, oh, it was fabulous.
You you have an amazing, amazing work ethic, like an unbelievable work ethic. You're such a hard worker. You were always in there before me in the morning, doing your lines, working hard. Do you think that comes partly from having a working class background where, like, you work hard? Whatever it is that you do, you work hard.
Well, I think you're totally right, because once again, you see, if you have, you have been given an example of a good work ethic, whatever that might include, whether it does mean that you have to be there at a certain time because it's a knock-on effect, and you will then disrupt somebody else's routine. Like my daddy said, well, you've only got a cold. You know, you get to work.
Yeah.
Oh, daddy. No, come on, you'll soon, it'll soon be off after 2 hours. Oh, okay then. And you found that you actually didn't want to let anybody down, so that you instill that in yourself.
Yeah.
One thing my dad always said as well. Now, look, Sue, he said, when you get to London, you'll probably find that because you're not from, shall we say, a middle-class background or shall we say, upper working class. I quite like that. I don't know whether they call it upper working class. Well, if they don't, they should do it now then.
So many people think that working class means it has to be bleak all the time, that it has to be like a struggle. I think there are, you're right, there's different levels, isn't there? And there are lots of working class people succeeding and doing well and doing all right for themselves. It's like suddenly this idea of it all has to be bleak all the time. And I know it can be, it can be. But you're right, I do think there's different levels.
For me, because I think about it a lot, but I feel like working class is partly to do with having to work, or certainly to have come from a background where you have to work. It's not a choice. Like, it's a choice that we have made to make our living the way we make it, but we still have had to make a living.
Yeah.
It's not like we can sit about for years
I'm
and then doing
that
nothing.
Project. I don't fancy it.
I'll wait 6 months. Certainly in the early part of your career, you must have needed to work, right?
Oh, darling, I absolutely did. And you were terrified. I mean, I was so, so lucky. I know that I could go from one job to the next simply because, having been in the chorus of the Desert Song, where we went once to Cardiff, and John Anson went, oh, they can't even spell the title of the show right. Two S's, Desert Song. He went, oh, this don't bode well for the week, does it? We got the bloody poster wrong. I mean, I was lucky to be able to get one job after the other for certainly the first 2 or 3 years. And that was in the days, darlings, when you had a full year's work and you never missed a week. It was a proper dairy, as I call it, dairy full of dates.
Yeah.
Because you were there, because that was the contract. And then I finished that. And the producer that booked us for the Desert Song said, right, I'm taking John Hansen out now and another show. Because obviously he was a big, you know, big, really lovely man, a great star then. And he was in Rosemary, yet another one of, could be an early Andrew Lloyd Webber entrepreneurial look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got a job in that. I got elevated from the chorus then to, I played the part of Lady Jane. That was marvellous. I loved all that. And then I got a job in Godspell. Oh, darling, I was in that for 2 years.
Were you? Was that touring, West End, was it?
Yeah, it was both, actually. We were really lucky. So we had a short season at the Shaftesbury, a short season, say 6 weeks or so, at the Duke of York's, and then we did another 6 months at the Phoenix Theatre. So, darling, we had great money coming in for 2 years.
Wow, yeah.
Well, you could save a bit. So that's when I thought...
And how old were you then, Sue? What was...
I think by then I'd be about... 27.
So, okay. So was this before Opportunity Knocks, or was this after?
This was after.
Right.
Because when I went and appeared in Opportunity Knocks, I used to remember it. Do you remember? No. Opportunity Knocks. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, fabulous. I think the theme tune was catchier than the axe. Anyway.
So Opportunity Knocks before all of this?
Yes, because my friend... What you had to do in those days, if you had a friend of a friend that said, I've got somebody that I think would be all right for your show. They were only after amateurs or just not really professionals yet.
Yeah.
Although Victoria Wood went on it, dear. That was
lots of brilliant stars have come for it. Was Les Dennis Opportunity Knocks?
I think he might have been New Faces.
New Faces.
But it was similar, you know, the same. Yes.
And so how old were you on Opportunity Knocks?
I think I must have been then. I probably was then. About 23.
And did you really lose to a singing Jack Russell?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was the most appalling experience. I mean, not really, because, of course, my confidence
did it sing?
An all-time low.
But come on, could it sing?
Ah, yeah, but you see, not really.
I did, I was trying to do a bit of digging about this morning because I was like, I'm going to go on YouTube, see if I can spot this, find this singing Jack Russell. But you came up, the singing Jack Russell didn't. So I guess who's laughing now?
What was your TV break? What when you...
I think my TV break was actually a commercial. And I was in it with Liz Estenson. And Liz had a big break as well with Polly James and the Liverbirds.
Of course, oh, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
And she's now in Emmerdale, of course. She plays part of Diane.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah.
So, marvellous woman she is. I loved her. Well, I've always been very lucky.
What was your advert? What was it?
It was for a sucker.
A what?
I know.
I beg your pardon.
What sort of advert is this? Yeah.
Like a plunger? Toilet plunger?
No, it was an ice lolly. But
oh,
yes, we call them suckers.
Of course.
In Nottingham. And people have said to me...
When I beg your pardon.
I know, when I asked for my first sucker, when I first came to London, he went, what the fuck? I said... He said, you've got to be careful what you ask for, dear. And I had to explain what it was.
Sue going into shops asking for a sucker.
Yeah. it was hilarious. But so you get to learn, don't you, different sayings from different places.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah.
And we were nuns, dressed as nuns. And it was the interval and we went outside to go and buy a striped lolly.
Right.
You know with that strawberry stripe and you got chocolate on the... Oh, yeah, but you felt sick.
Yeah,
you know, they kept another
so many
take.
Takes, yeah.
Oh God, I've never had one since. I didn't feel good. Then you see, you get more, shall we say, contacts from things like that.
So you do one bit of telly and work breeds work, doesn't it? Yeah. So I mean, obviously, we've got to talk about Heidi High. When did that happen for you, and what was that experience like? Because that was stratospheric kind of fame.
Oh, yeah.
Heidi High was so huge, you know.
Yeah,
I grew up watching it. One of my first impressions was you, like, oh. Heidi High!
Oh, you know? I know, it's unbelievable.
Heidi High!
No, but anyway, to go back to what you said, I was in Greece at the time. I mean, you know, the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Greece. And suddenly, the agent, Richard Stone then, who sadly died, but darling, he knew everybody. He had Benny Hill as a client, Victoria Ward, all sorts of magic people.
Yeah.
And I was lucky to get him, you know, and he said, look, he said, people are looking for a cast. There's a new show. It's based on a holiday camp set in the 60s and stuff. He said, they haven't got a script as such yet, but they just want to meet people. So, of course, I went up to Jimmy's flat. Luckily, I didn't have to go to the BBC. They just wanted to see you in their environment.
Yeah.
And, of course, oh, dear, 109 steps, dear, because it was no lift. It was in a SW1.
It's the worst, isn't it? Going to an audition, but you've got to go up a flight of stairs and you're out of breath getting in.
Anyway.
You're ready to come in now, Laurie? Like, yeah. It's awful, isn't it? You're trying to be relaxed.
Yeah. What have you come for?
Oxygen.
Yeah. It's so true. And I knocked on the door and he came to the door, Jimmy Perry. He said, no, we don't want any pegs, thank you. I said, no, I'm not a gypsy, because I got a bowler hat on and a feather and an Afghan coat smelling of patchouli. You know, so he must
have... I don't want any pegs.
Oh, we got it. I said, no, we're not a gypsy. I've come for the chat. So I went in and basically, you know, what have you done? Da, 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 da. And you didn't hear anything for a year.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I mean, obviously, like Laura said, that was like, it absolutely catapulted you to being a household name. Mm. How did you handle that? How did your family handle that? What was it like to suddenly be famous?
Well, I can tell you from both sides. My side, it was I went to Chapel Market, for anybody that might know it. It's in North London,
yep,
near the Angel Tube. And these people kept looking at me and I kept smiling. I think we'd been on for 3 weeks or something, you know, and psst, I think she's in that show, you know. Go and ask her. And anyway, nobody bothered. And then a few weeks after that, somebody said, I've been watching Heidi High, says, and I'm sure you play that part of the Chalamet. I said, and I went, yes, I do, actually. I went all posh. I mean, how ridiculous. I mean, I don't know why I went posh. It's probably because deep down, you probably thought you were
success
taught.
Success is connected to that somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. That
one, successful people. My grandma used to do that. When she answered the phone, she would answer them and she'd go, hello. You know, she was an East End woman.
My mum still does it. My
like a phone voice that you thought somehow that is how
my
you're supposed
still
to sound
yeah.
in a formal or successful situation.
My mum works at a solicitor's, not particularly posh solicitor's, but it's a solicitor's nonetheless, and she answers the phone and it's very, hello, Lightfoot. And they're like, all right, mum, it's me. Oh, hello, love.
Yeah, you know, and it's,
but she still does it. She still does it. Because
you know,
it is, you're right,
it.
Hannah, it is.
Don't forget, if you're a receptionist or people don't like being called that, do they? You know, the front of house, you know, but they're usually now, they're representing the firm. So I guess the employers don't want somebody that's going, Lightfoot.
Yeah, but why not, Sue? Do you know what I mean? Also, like, what's wrong with that also?
So you've done your posh voice to the people in Chapel
Market.
Yeah,
and they went, oh dear, this is no good. And then I got used to it a bit more. It's not the fact that you think, you know, you don't believe your own publicity. The fact is that we did it for 10 years, so you kind of do get to know how to handle it.
Yeah.
You don't ignore the people. Tony Curtis once said, never, ever ignore the public. He said, I talk always about some like it hot, because he said, if you don't and you don't acknowledge that, people are saying you've dismissed their memories. Have they pretended all these years that they've never seen that show? So you can't. So I learned how to handle stuff, and then of course you get a follow on because you're a new person on the TV. You get
and also, you know, you're not hard to spot either, Sue, because of your amazing dress sense as well.
Yeah.
So you're never going to like fade into the background.
No, and the thing
you?
Is,
hey, you're not putting your dark glasses on.
No.
Well, I've never liked that, dear, because you trip up, you know, you can't find the bloody pavement and you're in the gutter before you know it.
So were you still getting on the bus, Sue? Were you still trying to
get on the bus.
Yeah, but did you at the time, at the height of Heidi High, did you sort of shrink and go, do you know what, I'm going to get a cab, I'm going
to... I think you do tend to get a cab because it's like... you've only got to get one person come up to you.
And then there's...
And you know, that person, God love them, is probably taken 1 hour to pluck up the courage.
Yeah.
Because they don't know if they're going to get rejected. And who wants that? And that's another nail in your coffin as a performer.
Yeah.
You know, you've got... But some people are shy. Kenny Everett used to say to me, right, because we used to see each other. I was filming that and he was doing cunning stunts and all that.
Yeah.
And... They used to give us a party on the sixth floor. Anybody that's been in the series for the Beeb that year, he had a party.
Party on the sixth floor, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they still do it, and it's supposed to thank you.
Oh, do they? I've just done a sitcom from BBC. I ain't been invited to the sixth floor.
Well, maybe
right,
is that
so,
what
can
you
we
will.
Have a word, please?
No, you will. Yes, yeah, speak to the agent.
Yeah,
can I just have a word in there? And he used to say, we have looked through that door. Is anybody in there? We should just have a look. I said, they seem to be quite... Oh, he said, I'm not going in, Sue. I said, oh, come on, it'll be fine. You've only got to be there for 15 minutes. So he said, oh, all right then. But you see, some people don't want to acknowledge. So I can see why. But going back to what you said, when I used to go back home sometimes, and they'd go, oh, you won't want to speak to us now, will you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course they would. What are you talking about? I said, you're my family and some and friends and that. No, we're not good enough. And I said, no, please do not play that card. Don't do it. Just because I'm looking my job to meet all sorts of people does not mean to say that I'm absolutely any different. I might have met lots more different people to what you and I have ever known. But no, you adapt. Of course, you actually adapt. So it's like you were saying earlier, though, Hannah, when you said, you know, you're fortunate enough to, you can speak with so-called working class, but, you know, you've met all sorts. You know, it's the person that you're talking to that matters.
But that's an interesting thing about going home and suddenly your parents, family, friends, presuming you're going to feel that you've elevated yourself beyond them. That must be a tricky thing to negotiate.
It absolutely is. Because also, coming back to what we said, they are interested in, you know, oh, where have you been today? What show have you done today? And then, of course, straight away I go, oh, I just went to Soho Recording Studios and just did an advert for chewing gum. But anyway, how's the family? How's everybody going? I don't mind. I tell them that much, but you don't want to be go on holding and on. Court for a day.
Yeah.
It's not bloody fair. So, but then they soon realise. And then when you say to them, look, darling, would you like to come and see a recording of a show? Then you can see exactly what happens and, you know, and who you meet. And then I can introduce you. So that's how we dealt with it. We always were to invite all our families. I was with the...
Make them part of it.
Yeah. And it's marvellous. And then they realise. But having
they realise it's not glamorous.
Yeah.
It ain't glamorous. It's...
No.
Work.
But also... Also, they understand as well that they've loved it because the people that you're working with, that you've introduced them to, they understand that probably everybody's the same.
Yeah.
You see, what's really got on my nerves in the last 2 or 3 years is when a lot of people are making too much of this. Well, you know, it's only the Eddie Redmaynes of the world. I'm only using him as an example because he's the first one to tell you he's from Eton.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Bloggs from somewhere like Burnley or whatever. I mean, they probably, the upper class just somehow as well, they probably got their own intimidatory things that...
Of course.
I'm probably too much of a posh boy and I never get to be in EastEnders. So, you know, it does work both ways, to be fair. But I think if you've been fortunate enough to have had a good education, you've been encouraged, doesn't matter whether it's Eton, it could be a fantastic secondary modern school. It's who inspires you. That's what you've got to have.
Yeah.
You know, and if they can see something in you, whatever you want to do, you want to be a welder, I say to people now, look here, darling, I don't think you should go into the business unless you absolutely are prepared to not do as much work as you'd like, obviously, because there's thousands now for the one job. And you're not going to be an STAR overnight.
No.
You know, it requires work and also it requires respect. I said, you've got to work with a lot of people and they're trying to make you look the best you can. So you have to respect the people you work with.
Sue, do you, you've had such a lengthy career. Is it 50-odd years, would you say?
In 2 years' time, I'm thrilled to say 50!
Yay! Yeah, that's amazing. Now, if that's not a cause for a party, I don't know what it is.
But also, it's incredible, you know, to maintain, like, it's just going back to what you just said about it's a bloody marathon and you have to keep working hard, you know, like, you finished Heidi High, you did 10 years of it, and then, you know, you're back on the treadmill again and you're going, right, what's next? And it's like, you have to keep working hard. You can't stop. Obviously, having spent so long in the industry, and we are all coming at this from a place of privilege now. I'm just interested to get your take on it, really. Do you still feel working class at your roots? Do you still feel connected to your working class roots? Or are you somewhere in between?
No, that's it. What you just said.
Still connected.
That is absolutely the case. That one word says it all. Yeah, because deep down, that gave you a fabulous chance from you were born to when you decided that you'd like to pursue your passion. But don't forget, you were shaped then. Mm. 24 years of mine was before I went into the business per se.
Yeah.
Now, you can't really disconnect yourself from that in a way.
Of course
you've got
not,
to
yeah.
be able to always go, how lovely I'm. I had such a fabulous people, you know, your friends, your family and everybody. But equally, London and the profession has given me a superb life.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to try and equate the two. And don't forget that, you know, other people have had faith in you and realised that, you know, but, you know, you have to learn from them as well. So I'd like to say I'm fully connected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In every class,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But you don't forget your roots. But equally, one doesn't want to, you know, expressly say, oh, well, I was on a council estate and I've... Nothing wrong with that. But so often, people define themselves as, you know, and it was a terrible da-da-da-da-da. But no, it doesn't matter. I know you're born in a council estate, but who cares? Move on. We don't want you to actually constantly
be defined by that beginning.
Yes, or yeah. talk about it as if it's a big thing that's never going to leave you.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. But David Croft did say to me one day, he said, Sue, you know, when you're lucky enough to get a certain amount of money, he said, lifestyles do go to the next level because you want a chocolate covered cake instead of a sponge. You know, he sort of looked at it like that. So he said, the more you've got, the more elevated you are, you see. And then you've got to be so careful that you're not money oriented.
Yeah.
You know, but I tell you one thing now, I'm certainly glad that I can turn left when I'm on a plane.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fabulous. I've got, oh, you saw, I'm turning left, thank you. I'm just going, as opposed to, oh, it's not bloody steerage again, is it? I mean, you know, well, you
well, you've earned it. You've earned it.
Yeah, you see, that's
50
the thing.
Years, you've earned it,
yeah.
you know.
There's something I really wanted to ask you, because you have like this amazing eclectic CV, which I love. And even as a director, I aspire to, because I love going from different genres to different genres. Like, I love that you're in Heidi High and you've done Romeo and Juliet and you've done Shout the Musical and then you've done Habeas Corpus. That's how I love to be as well. And when I meet other people, like when I met you, I thought, oh, she's, you know, we've got that in common. We like being able to really move between things. Have you ever, though, like walked into anything where you felt like, oh my gosh, like the imposter syndrome thing, where you've gone into a Romeo and Juliet or somewhere where you've thought, has anything ever made you feel?
I think that might have been the one, actually. And my first Shakespeare, and I'd be about 54.
Well,
when obviously I was the nurse. But I thought to myself, look, Sue, it doesn't matter that this is your first go. Your producer knows. She obviously thinks you're good enough to do it. You wouldn't have got the job. That's why I would say to the younger ones now, I said, you're bound to be anxious. You're bound to get a bit of anxiety. We all do still. It's part of the job.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So I went, no, come on, Sue, you'll be fine. Anyway, sadly, first off, my anxieties were slightly founded because the director, he was lovely, but I won't say it's not fair. I'd never mention. Anyway, this director never seemed to come back in the afternoon after lunch. And I thought, oh, but somebody's not come back.
Well, never, ever.
Well, no.
He likes a long lunch.
Yeah, that's
say,
it.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't realise this. And I was getting a bit panicky, darling, because the thing is, we only had about 2.5 weeks to rehearse. And you know what they make you do? They make you go round every morning for an hour feeling the heat in bloody Padua. You know, you have to walk around. They've got this man in from some drama school who was very lovely, but he said, can you feel the heat? I said,
yeah, can we? Open in a fortnight.
Yeah. It was so true. And I thought, this can't be happening to me. I've got so much to bloody learn. And oh, I said, don't panic, Sue. Don't panic. So then I had to say, because darling, you know, you're up against it. You don't want to drop anybody in it, but you have to make people aware. So I had to phone the producer. All I said was, I'm saying nothing, but he doesn't appear to come back. And I didn't want to drop in it. So she said, no, she said, I know what's wrong. And, you know, so I went, oh, dear. Anyway, she said, it's all right. She said, it's okay, I'll have a word. Anyway, they had the word, but he never came back.
Oh, at all.
Right.
No.
So not even
still
the morning.
In the pub, apparently.
Yeah, that's it. So we're still in the...
still in the pub.
Yeah. So we had the assistant director, It was absolutely marvellous. And he said to me, I said, I do know what this means. I said, Neil, I'm sure I do. I said, but I feel as if I'm acting in Kew Gardens. It's very flowery. I said, does that bit, you know, does that bit mean, well, I'm actually going to get a pint of milk? I mean, something as straightforward as that.
He said, it often does mean that, yeah.
So he said, So I said, oh, all right then. I said, as long as I've got the gist and I know what you want.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I just got to get there. But exactly what you said, though, Hannah, when you're not used to that kind of scripture.
Yeah.
And
well, you presumably have never done it at school or covered it at school, you know, so you're like, it's like, what is this? It all lies in that education where you're like, I've never read anything like this. I've gone and seen it. I've never read it.
No, amazing. So you go, all right. And then you do get that little twinge of, oh, we've only had gone to grammar school. Then you think, no. And then you think, come on, so that's got nothing to do with it. You know, a lot of people have to come to grips and just get a grip yourself and do it, because it wasn't just me. There was a lot of people in that show. You know, they had big parts. I mean, there's Paul Romeo.
Yeah, start talking to other actors and a lot of them have that same fear, don't they?
Yes.
Because Shakespeare does have this thing about it where you go, oh, I don't think I'm clever enough to do it.
Oh,
that's
yes.
how I feel. Yeah.
Well, it was, but it's so true. And then you think, no. And then when you do it, you think, oh, God, this was a tremendous experience. But I blooming loved it. I would do it again. Definitely I'd do it again, because I think there's some great... And Shakespeare's funny.
Oh, very.
You know, you don't know that he's funny.
But that's because we've been taught in an over sort of academic way. And actually, Shakespeare is like meant for the working class people of his time. That's what it was for. It was,
you know, if it was taught by someone like Sue Gaines. So basically, here, love, she's just wanting a cup of tea and she's saying, all right, then. You know, if it was taught like that,
but
loads of kids wouldn't be scared of it.
And like, you go, yes, of course, it's the original folio. And you're like, Like, what's that going to do? It's not what Shakespeare intended at all. He intended everybody to be, you know, having a few drinks and coming in and out and watching the show. That's what it's written for. In Shakespeare, you always notice that he repeats the plot loads. That's because everyone was hammered and they would go out, genuinely, have sex, come back, and they'd have to be reminded of the plot all the time because they'd have missed it. Whereas we think it's written for people to sit and go, oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yes.
And we've created that. That's not what he created. We've created this sort of mystery around
it. Yeah, so you're right. A lot of people between then and now, they, in their own pretentious way, have elevated...
Yeah, and try to own it and keep it from people. And...
Yeah.
Listen, I could genuinely talk to you all day. How we work together and got any work done, I do not know, because let's be honest, we both like a chat.
We're going to continue this down the pub, aren't we?
We are going to have a Prosecco. Down the pub. Yeah. Listener, feel free to come along. It's honestly, it's always so amazing to see you, and I could just listen to you talk all day. This was our chance to celebrate the amazing things you've done in your career and to celebrate everything that you've done and you as a person. But we always ask our guests... Before we wrap up, is there anyone you'd like to celebrate who's been a big influence in your life?
Yes, one of the major ones, apart from, goes without saying, my mum and dad and my sister's been absolutely helpful. We had a teacher and he was absolutely tremendous. He was a religious instructor called Mr. Edwards, and he was very tall. I'd be about 16 last year at school. And he said to us, never, ever, ever give up your belief in that something is always going... You see, it makes me very emotional because I've still remembered it.
Oh.
And he said, I was giving up hope in the war, he said, because my wife sent me a 30-piece dinner service. And he got the letter and he said, all it was, he saw this letter and he said, darling, we've got the Willow Patton Place dinner service that we've been saving up for. And he said, that made me want to get back home more than anything else in my life. Now, we were absolutely crying. Grown boys in the show were going, oh, Mr. Edwards, I can't believe it. So what I'm saying is, he was never afraid to let any emotion show.
Mm.
And it was human. And that's, I've always forgotten, I've never forgotten and always remembered it. So, yes, he was a great influence in my life. Bless him. Fabulous.
What was his name again?
Mr. Edwards.
Did you ever find out his first name?
No.
Oh, Mr.
Oh, that's even better,
wasn't it? Mr. Edwards, and he was 6'6". And we used to say, the boys would say to us after, you know, Mr. Edwards, you know why he's so tall? He was put on the rack.
Well, Sue, it's been so amazing to talk to you, honestly. Like, I was so excited for today. And so we're going to celebrate you and obviously Mr. Edwards. Thank you so much.
May I say thank you and every success with the podcast and everybody to do with it, Michelle and Ben, who've been absolutely terrific. And thank you. And thank you very much for asking me. I'm honoured.
Thank you for coming. We're honoured. Thanks, Sue.
Pleasure. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Oh my God, I am so thrilled. And the inner child that was obsessed with Heidi High is like, well, life complete. What an incredible woman, an incredible, and actually, listener, we went on to the pub next door straight after that, and we sat in the pub for about 4 hours, knocking back the old Prosecco.
And like one by one, like extra people joined the party, didn't they? Like we suddenly, you know, people just warmed to her so much. I feel like it's sort of an accident, if I'm honest, isn't it, that it's turned out to be our Christmas episode, but it feels so perfect because that's what she is really, isn't she? She's like just a warm Christmas cracker. In fact, she often looks like one too. She just is joy personified. And I'm so glad that that came across, or I hope it came across to the listener, is that she's herself. And she, I suppose, an obvious word for it is eccentric and flamboyant, I always think is a better word for her. You know, she's full of that sort of theatrical wonder. But she is also the sharpest cookie with the most amazing work ethic, unbelievably bright. And I really hope that people get to see her do straight acting as well, because she's one hell of an actress. You know, she really is a force to be reckoned with and a joy.
And such a lovely way to end the series, I think. That's kind of it, guys. That's the last one. We're going to be back early next year. We've got some amazing guests lined up, and I know Hannah and I really just want to say thank you to everyone that's tuned in and supported us. It's really resonated in a way that we weren't expecting. I'd just be happy if one person had had a listen, but it's
we were actually giving a talk the other day, weren't we, Laura, because someone asked us to about the podcast, and Laura actually said we're just so chuffed that it wasn't only our mums who listened. And it really wasn't. We're sort of blown away by the level of people that have listened, and to your incredibly kind emails and tweets and Insta messages, and it's just been really quite overwhelming. So thank you.
Yeah, Han's absolutely right. We've been inundated with lots of people just messaging about the show and guests they'd like on, so we thought we might as well do an official email. So we'd love to hear from you, any guest ideas that you've got, or any issues you want to bring up, stories that you've got, any heroes you'd like to share with us, working class heroes, please email in. And the place to do that is properclasspodcast@gmail.com. That is the properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Not the, just properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Have you got
Thank you, Nan. Thank you, Nan, for the explanation there.
Right, thank you.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you
Merry
so
Christmas,
much.
Everyone. I hope everyone stays safe, and whatever your Christmas turns out like, I hope it's a good one.
We'll see you in the new year.
Oh, Merry Christmas and keep it classy.
Oh, Christ, I thought we were going to get away with that.
Never.
Proper Class Podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabee Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music. This episode was recorded at the Umbrella Rooms. Thank you so much for downloading the Proper Class Podcast, but we just wondered if we could ask a little favour of you and talk you into hitting the old subscribe button. I mean, I've no idea where that is, but I'm sure you'll figure it out. That way you'll never miss out on any of our up-and-coming amazing guests. Also, not going to lie, it does make us look quite popular.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.